Okay, I'll just do the introduction here. 11th of July 2017, Simon Johnson is interviewing Alan Cruise about his years working in the family grocery, Cruise Grocery on Featherston Street. Alan, you told me that the building is now occupied by the Merlin Dairy.
Yeah, it's Merlin's, actually. Merlin's
Dairy. Merlin's Dairy.
Yeah, yeah.
Not Merlin like the, not the wizard.
Merlin's.
No, no. And, of course, your shop wasn't a dairy. It was a grocery.
It was a grocery shop. 5 day a week grocery shop, which were pre-supermarket times.
Mm-hmm.
So supermarkets weren't even begun at that stage. They weren't even... they weren't around till when? Probably the 60s, 70s? Trying to think when supermarkets first appeared on the scene. I can't remember.
So we're talking about the from your experiences from the early 1950s, basically.
Probably late 40s, early 50s.
Do you remember roughly when your father acquired the dairy?
It's probably about... Just post-war. I don't know exactly the date. I can find that out, but I don't know at the moment. But it's. I do recall how old I was at the time. I was probably just born, and we lived in Shamrock Street, and we moved to the grocer's shop. So I'm now 74. So it would be in the... I was born in 43, so it's just post-war.
And what did your father do before he bought the grocery?
Well, he had worked... in the grocery business. He'd worked down in Dunedin for his uncle's grocery business, and he was an insurance agent as well up in Wairoa, but he had been had an interest in the grocery field, and it was an opportunity to buy into this business, so it came up. So they shifted back to Palmerston North from Hawke's Bay. Next minute they're away.
Right.
So the business was, really begun. It wasn't a very big business, but it grew up as the suburb grew up around it.
So it was a four square grocery.
No, it actually wasn't a four square.
It wasn't.
So I said, I've put you wrong.
That's okay. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, it wasn't a four square. It was part of a group, but it wasn't. I thought it was four square, and I just went to find out.
Do you remember what the group was called?
No. I can find that out, though, but I don't. Yeah, so some of this thing, yeah, this is what I'm saying.
Now, you before we get on to your involvement and what you did, I just look through the sort of things you sold and who worked there. What involvement was there of other members of your family, like your mother and your, any brothers or sisters?
No, my mother did not work in the business. Basically, my father was it. He was the business, a one-man shop. So if you go back to Ronnie Barker and Open All Hours, that would be a prime example of an Arkwright. I could see Arkwright being my father. And my job and my brother's prior to me were Granvilles. We did the biking and we did the filling up of stock and weighing up stuff, putting it in bags, doing those sorts of things. A lot different if we just realise that back in those days there wasn't the choice of products that you have today.
Yes.
For instance, milk was milk. You had a bottle of milk, that was it. You didn't have 15 different choices of what you have now. And so sugar was sugar. Flour was flour. Now you walk into a supermarket, you have 15 different choices. So most stuff arrived in bulk and had to be repacked. Plastic bags weren't available. You've got to remember that plastic bags and plastic wrappings, when you pick something up today, it's just, what did I go to unwrap yesterday? Well, some ice cream cones, and they're double wrapped in plastic, you know, just ridiculous. And we've gone berserk with plastic. Plastics were not involved.
So brown paper bags.
Brown paper bags were the thing. And we may go back to that. Who knows?
We could well do that.
Yes. So your brown paper bags were what things were packed in. So, and the other thing, you know, if you ask me to try to remember the difference between, this big difference between today's supermarket and a 5 day a week grocery shop run by one person was the personalised service. You know, my father would know everyone that walked in the door, he would know their whole history, he would know their family structure, he would know what they eat. So it was all by memory.
And I guess having a small stock, I mean a small range, made it easier. As you say, there was just one sort of milk and one sort of flour. Could you just go quickly through the kind of things that would have been in the shop? You've mentioned flour and you know, bulk products. Fruit and vegetables?
Yes, fruit and vegetables he had. He had bread, flour, dried fruits, kerosene. Now there's a product you wouldn't see in a supermarket today.
What was it mainly used for?
Yeah, my understanding that kerosene was used for lamps and heating and lighting.
Yeah.
Heating, there was kerosene heaters.
Yes.
And kerosene lighting. So kerosene used to come in 44-gallon drums and had to be decanted into bottles and labelled. So that was my job, was putting the kerosene. So that was one of the products. He had hams. So a ham would come, it would be a whole ham, but he would cut that up with a
slicer.
He had a manual slicer, and then laterally he got an electric slicer. So these things. Tills are another thing. Oh, we'll get back to products. Biscuits, bread, fruit, veggies, kerosene, staples, I suppose, just what people probably people didn't have the variety of food that you have today. We forget about that.
Well, I remember myself as a child that you ate the same things pretty much every day.
Yes.
And you didn't think anything unusual about that.
No.
Now you were saying that was one of your jobs was to be putting things into smaller packets for sale.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sultanas.
Yeah.
They came in boxes and wooden boxes. Tea came in tea chests. They were silver lined. I don't know what the product was that they were lined with, but it was not sure.
Yeah.
Silver paper.
And they were roughly about a meter square, something like that.
Roughly.
Yes, I remember them myself because they were sometimes used when people moved house because they were light and you could get a lot into them.
Yes. So the tea had to be decanted out into plastic, brown paper bags. The brown paper bags were then weighed, so they all had to be the same weight. So that was another thing, is you weighed everything. So my job was after school job, was weighing that stuff and then putting them in boxes and they'd go on the shelf. So, we didn't have use-by dates. No use-by, everything has its best before dates and use-by dates, none of that stuff. No descriptions of, that tea was tea. I can't remember. I don't think there was different brands of tea. You want tea? Here it is.
So the bags that you made up, when someone came in, they would buy something that had already been bagged.
And on the shelf.
Unless they wanted an especially large amount or something like
that. Well, it was like bread. Mrs. Smith would come in the door and my father would have there was a little metal clip that he pushed into the loaf of bread, you know, a little pin, and on it was a little label with Mrs. Smith or her name, or Mrs. Jones, or he'd probably have the Christian name on there. And so he did that every morning. So he went and got the bread was delivered from the baker, and he would then label everybody's bread who were coming in that day.
Can you remember who the baker was?
No, sorry.
No. But would it have been somebody who made bread for, baked bread for, say, a number of shops like yours.
Yes, there'd be a bulk baker. Yeah.
And they just drop
it off. They still existed. Yeah, and vegetables. My father, the Chinese, there was auction houses like Arledge Brothers, those sort of auction houses. He would get up at 4 or 5 in the morning and he would go and he'd be bidding against the other vegetable shops. Some shops were pure vegetable shops.
That was the greengrocers.
And so he'd be bidding against those for celery and cabbages and whatever was going at the time, beans. And so he'd come home loaded up with those things.
Yeah. He had a van, did he?
Yeah, he had a van, yeah. So that he would come bring those in. So I'm just trying to think what else.
Over the time that you remember being in the shop, either working there or when you were younger, did you notice any differing slight changes in trends in what people bought and what they ate and what things they asked for?
Probably not in the time I was there,
no.
But I'm just trying to think, can you stop? There wasn't many changes because this was the 50s and most changes came later on.
Sure, that's fine.
You in the 60s, once supermarkets had appeared to emerge, there was a lot of changes in products arrived. The people tended to shop daily. Mostly there'd be women, and the reason was that Dad would be out at work, women would be at home doing the chores. They you know, we didn't have the things we have today. They didn't have fridges or freezers, so they couldn't store food. They did, some people had their own gardens, same vegetable gardens. They had hens and had their own eggs. Not everyone did that, but a lot of people did, post-war, of course. So they came in daily for their groceries. What they could carry home. And they'd have shopping trolleys. If they couldn't carry it, then that's when Granville came in.
Yeah.
And we used to deliver it.
Yeah.
So people got their groceries delivered to home. So, and the other thing we got to remember, there were no cards. So when people came and purchased things, you didn't have a card, you didn't pay with a card, you paid with cash. And sometimes it was credit. So my father, knowing everyone would know that John Smith had just gone off, been to hospital to have an operation, he was off work and he wasn't getting paid, or someone had had an accident. There was no ACC in those days, so they didn't have any money. And so he gave them credit and allowed them to catch up at times. So this was just a verbal, written in a little notebook, personalised again. So these are some of the differences. The other big difference was getting back, and I know I'm going all over the place, but that's the way it is. Bottles were all returned mostly through the grocer shop. So, and they went to a bottle-o, and the bottle-o was on the corner of Seddon Street and Featherston Street, and it was huge. And he washed. So all the bottles ended up there, and bottles were recycled. So glass was recycled. This is the problem we have today. We're not doing that.
Now, by glass, you mean the bottle itself, don't you?
Yeah, the whole bottle.
Not being made into new bottles. So, I mean, I remember milk bottles that were recycled and soft drink bottles that were. What other products that came in a bottle would you recycle on a regular basis?
Well, it'd be milk, of course.
Kerosene?
Possibly. I'm not sure about that. Kerosene, but there'd certainly be jars of goods, bottles of drink, soft drinks. Those sorts of things ultimately ended up in the bottle company. He then sent them back to the companies that were rebottling all these products. So basically the bottles that were being recycled would be bottles that were being Don't think we had wine in those days in the same quantity.
No.
No. Wine would be a rare sort of a...
So the sort of the...
Beers?
Mm?
He didn't sell beers either.
No.
So,
beer bottles were
they recycled. Were recycled, definitely. So anything that was re-bottled, you know. That was a change. That was a difference.
So your shop was on Featherston Street.
Yes.
And whereabouts did you live in relation to the shop?
We lived immediately behind the shop was detached from the house, but we lived in it was probably a late 19th century house, a villa, quite a large villa, wooden weatherboard house. We had about half an acre of land. My understanding is this house originally may have been the first farmhouse in the area, because not far from us was farmland, you know. I mean, Botanical Road and Tremaine Avenue, Seddon Street area, all that, when we first shifted in there, was farmland, you know. So, but we had about half an acre, which a lot of people had half acre sections in those days. Why we thought it was a part of the farm, we never researched that, but it had a hayloft. There was a hayloft behind our house, and that was a genuine old hayloft. So the house, don't know the age of the house, but
Were the immediate houses around your house a similar age to yours, or were they a bit newer?
No, a bit later. Our house was probably the oldest house.
Yeah, so it gives me an idea that the land was probably more, and it was just shrinking in.
That's exactly.
And of course, in after the war, they'd shrink in even more.
Yep.
That's exactly just the way it used to go.
And
so, what do you do with half an acre? What did your family?
Oh, my father. One of his big interests was daffodils. His father, who lived in Owaka, which is down in Otago, was a professional gardener. He lived on the edge of Lake Catlins, but he was a specialist in growing and breeding daffodils. So my father obviously picked up on that. So he used to show daffodils. So he grew daffodils. There was daffodils. I don't know how many, but there was a lot, and there was daffodil shows. I don't think they still have daffodil shows today. I'm not sure.
Well, these are flower shows,
generally, but these were particularly daffodils. And so I know that the fridge got emptied out the night before the beer and the everything that was in the fridge got taken out and put in the safe. We had safes in those days. We did have a fridge, so we must have been one of the few people that did have a fridge. And the daffodils used to go in the fridge, so that kept them. So the other thing he had, we had our own hens, and we had about 17 to 20 hens that laid eggs. We had huge vegetable garden, grew all his own vegetables. So we had a shop, but we still grew our own vegetables. So that was a.
Did you sell any of the things you grew?
Oh, I can't remember that. That was not sure. I do remember that on Sunday, every Sunday, we had bread and milk pudding, and my father used to cook bread and milk. I think it was called bread and milk pudding.
Yeah.
And that was his specialty, and basically I found out what that was all about, was getting rid of the bread. It was getting rid of the bread on the family. This is the bread that was left over from the week, so it got stale, so it got recooked. So the house, we did have people knock on the door. Because the house was in the shop, there's always people on the weekend tapping on the back door wanting some butter. Or a loaf of bread, or they'd forgotten to buy something, and so he was sort of tolerant of that. That was part of the act. It wasn't a dairy, but so we had so that's right. We lived on the site, and so the only people working in the shop was myself or my brothers and my father.
Now the houses immediately close to where you were presumably all pre-war, like there were old ones like yours or a bit later?
I'd say pre-war and just immediately, pre-war, be pre-war, between the war houses.
Would it be possible, and you may not, but just as a thought, would there be particular kinds of families or people living in these older houses? Mainly younger people or middle-aged people or older people?
I think a fairly mixed bag of people. Right. Because I just think that the people that I used to associate with friends when I was 7 or 8, they had families.
Mm.
So there was business people living around us, there was employees. Mm. So it was a mixed bag, really. When you're 7 or 8 years old, you're probably not observing that quite the same.
No, you wouldn't. Mm. Now, the new area, which is on the north side of Featherstone Street, that was originally farmland. Who owned
well,
that?
Well, if you're in Featherstone Street, and that went right down, if you went to the end of Featherstone Street to
Botanical
Road, where the old Glaxo laboratories used to be, that was all farmland. Okay. Mm. Now, if you turn right, there was no Seddon Street. There never used to be Seddon Street, Birmingham Street.
Mm.
So if you get that whole area, you go down to Seddon Street up to Tremaine Avenue, that whole area on the western side or the southwestern side was all new. Seddon, Birmingham, etc.
Yeah, well, the houses are all post-war.
They were
houses.
All new. So suddenly my father, and that would be in the 50s, suddenly the business doubled or tripled, and that was a godsend for him because, and I do recall, you ask who owned the farmland.
Hollows.
Hollows Nurseries.
Yes.
Yes, right, sort of mirroring the right back to where Seddon Street is now, mirroring the Mungoni River, was the Hollows Nurseries and Hollows Orchards.
Right.
Mostly orchards, apples, pears, those sorts of trees. Yeah.
Yeah.
Big stuff. So the Hollows owned a lot of that land, which got sold off.
So do you have any recollection of that area being a farm, and then the developers coming in, or that a bit early for you to remember?
No, I do recall that. I do recall the houses suddenly being built. That happened very rapidly. It was just amazing. It was a boom time, post-war boom, I suppose.
Yeah.
And post-war baby boom would have been responsible for
and
some
I think
of
we were doing quite well economically as a country in the
50s.
Wool
and products like that.
Yeah. Did you notice that the people who were moving into this new area, was there anything in any way that was slightly different about, say, the age or even the racial mix?
I cannot recall the racial mix. I can recall there were young families, a lot of young families.
Right.
And so they wanted somebody to... We were the nearest shop.
Mm.
So... an interaction, I do recall as a child, we always had jobs. So we either worked for our fathers, or if our fathers were in business, or we worked the bottle man.
Mm-hmm.
We'd help the bottle man clean bottles and the cleaning bottles over the after school.
What did that involve?
Oh,
was it hand cleaning? Did you have a machine?
Yeah,
to clean
machines.
The
they were brushes. They were rotation brushes, and so we had to get all the gunk because bottles would inevitably come in full of slime and rubbish, and they'd been stored outside for about 6 months or a year. Because they used to have scout drives, scout bottle drives, and that was to raise money. That was a big thing. So that area also became, bottles were another big product. The recycling of bottles.
So just to go back to the new area that had gone up there, did the people who lived in that area have slightly different needs to your old regulars? I mean, was there anything that you can recall that made them, you know, slightly different in any way to your regulars?
Cars were starting to come on the scene.
Now, you've told me, Alan, that that your father ran a very personal grocery service and that he knew most of the customers and what their regular orders were. Any other aspects of that you can think about, the whole idea of the grocer being somebody who everybody knows and who knows everybody?
Well, I do know I was behind the scenes as a child, listening to conversations, so he would know all about their family life, you know. And I sometimes compare that with today when you walk into a supermarket and all you get is beep, 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 and the checkout person would not know who you were by name. There's no conversation takes place because it's a very impersonal thing. So that's the big difference. He interacted. He was a salesman, and he was selling his, just like Arkwright, selling his specials of the day. So he would have, although Mrs. Smith or Mrs. Jones would come in and have her regular box of groceries, he would attempt to sell stuff that he had on special. So that would happen quite every week. He'd have something, so it would be up on the...
Perhaps some of the bread before it ended up as bread pudding.
Well, the other thing he did was, that's the other personalised thing, is he did his own sign writing. So he learnt calligraphy, and he did all his own sign writing. So if he was having specials or whatever, so that was all up on the window.
What did he use to make his signs? Was it paint or brush?
Yeah,
or?
Paint. It was paint. It was obviously paint that you could remove easily. I don't know what it was. It was water-based paint of some sort.
So he used a brush to apply it?
Yeah, a brush. Yeah, yeah. It was very steady of hand. Yeah, I can remember that.
So you mentioned earlier that that credit could be offered if somebody was out of work or something like that. Was there a lot of unemployment at the time that you recall? I'm not talking about somebody who was sick and couldn't work, but were there people who were long-term unemployed that you can remember?
That I cannot remember. No,
that's fine.
Reply to that.
That's okay.
Yeah, I mostly would know about people that were sick.
And orders were made, people had regular orders, and these were made up for them, is that correct? And how did that not, did they ring up at all to request stuff, or?
We did have a telephone, so there we go. So the phone did go occasionally, so the answer would be yes, they were phoned. It's interesting, I tried to ring Merlin's Dairy this morning and they're not on the phone. No phone. So the days of phones in the small dairies don't exist. They don't need a phone, I suppose.
So were a lot of the orders that you delivered, were they ones that your father just automatically knew what Mrs. Smith wanted and he just made it up and that was that?
That was a lot of that. Or Mrs. Smith would come in and drop off her list. She would come in and drop, she'd make up her shopping list and drop it to him. It would be a written list, and he would know exactly what she had, what, you know, if it was a particular brand or rah-rah. So from that, if it got to, he made a decision whether that was pick-upable or deliverable. So the size, he would know that Mrs. Smith or Mrs. Brown had a... what she could carry on her bike or on her shopping bag, trolley. So he just seemed to be, okay, the rest gets delivered.
Right.
And she would know that. Now, whether they all had phones or not.
No,
not
some
sure,
people didn't.
We had party lines, didn't we, in those days?
I don't remember myself, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, you're getting back.
Was there a cost for deliveries?
Sorry?
Was there a
no,
cost?
No, it's free delivery. That was written on the... shop, free delivery. That was another very important part of the service. You didn't pay for that, no.
Now, you succeeded your brother as the Granville delivery boy.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. how that, well, tell me first, you know, at what point you succeeded him and, you know, why that was. Did he just say no, or did he reach an age when he was let off?
Well, I think that was it. He'd done his thing, and I was the succession plan. Probably I was being trained up, and he would have been probably going to high school then, had other commitments. Mm. And I was just sort of intermediate age. Mm. Yeah, intermediate age. Mm. And so it became a sort of a natural follow-up.
So you were about how old when you started?
Probably intermediate age. That would be 19, 11, that sort of age.
Yeah, about that, yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
And we went on we always had jobs after school, so the point I make is that was what we did. Because we worked every night after school, we either had paper runs, or I worked in a chemist shop after when I was at high school. You know, that you sort of become money conscious, and you became quite smart with.
What sort of jobs did you have before you became the delivery boy?
We used to create jobs in the school holidays, so we would, I'll just think now, we cycled a long way in those days. We used to cycle out past Longburn and hoe mangles, mangles being fodder crop for, so we'd do that. I can't remember, it wasn't very much we got paid. I know my father paid me £1 a week, for the delivering the groceries and filling up the other jobs. I worked on a dairy farm out at Bunnythorpe, so I had to go and cycle out to this dairy farm. I worked, well, when I say I, we, there's a sort of a team of us, we'd go, we used to pick lupins. So we used to go around and pick lupins pods, and the catchment board at the time would buy the seeds. So we used to dry them out, and you needed about half a ton. So on our bikes, we built trailers, and we carted all this green waste back home, potted it all, dried it out, made the seeds. So that was our pocket. This was pocket money too.
What age were you then, Aaron, when you were doing that? This had been after the delivery boy.
No, it was only as a child. Yeah, I'd be.
And the lupins were presumably for land stabilisation.
Yes.
Yes.
They were used out at on the riverbanks. They were used. This is Himatangi, Foxton Beach, to stop erosion, sand erosion coming in, sand travelling.
So you sold these to, well, your
father. Yeah, we sold them. Yeah, we didn't get very much. And the other thing we did was across the road, and you talk about farmland, the roads that run off Wood Street, parallel to Featherstone Street, were farmland behind there. And we used to pick the wool off the fences, and sell that. I don't know what happened to it, but we'd bag it up and sell it. So I suppose the point I made, we were work conscious, and so work was not a thing that I worried about. But it also allowed having my own money gave me a bit of independence.
So because you mentioned that your father gave you £1 for being a delivery boy. Now, if you were about 10 years old, £1 is very good money.
That was nice to save it up.
That was very, very good money indeed. I mean, my pocket money, I think, was about half a crown or something. But then I did a whole lot less.
Yes.
What did you mainly do with the money? Tell me some of the things that you bought.
I remember buying a bike. I remember buying my first bike. I wanted a particular bike with Sturmey Archer gears. You know, I was really...
That's the three-speed gear.
That was the latest. So I had to have one of those. So, I bought that and made sure it had light fittings and stuff, you know, additional. And I remember that was one thing I bought. But I'd buy some clothes as well, you know, buy clothes. I know your parents are supposed to feed and clothe you, but...
So were these everyday clothes or special clothes?
Oh, it might have been special stuff, yeah. place is just spending money, but saving as well. I had a savings account, post office savings account. Mm-hmm. Used to put it into that. I mean, ultimately, when I was 18, I had enough money to buy a car. 17 years old, so down the track, I still had money to buy my first car at 17. Some of that would have come from working after school.
What sort of car was it?
Oh, now you're going to ask the question. It was a 1948 Vauxhall 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, the bicycle that you rode for doing the deliveries, tell me about that.
Well, if you've watched Open All Hours and you've seen Grenville on the bike, it was the same sort of bike. One front wheel.
A small front wheel.
A small front wheel. Had a big metal basket on the front. Mm. You tried to get as much as independent steering, so the basket didn't interfere with your steering.
Mm.
But my job also was to maintain that bike. Look after it, make sure the tyres were good condition, pump them up. I wouldn't have a clue what sort of bike it was, what make it was.
I'm just, people will be interested in the future as to the kind of things people used. I mean, the delivery bike is, of course, a very common image, as you say, with the small wheel at the front, the big heavy cage to put the cardboard boxes in.
The seat was a hard leather seat, which wasn't very good for the undercarriage.
No. And did you have the Sturmey Archer 3-speed gear on?
No gears. It was just one gear. I don't know which gear. It was hard work. So I got fit. That was another thing. You got pretty fit. Mm. And so you didn't.
And the brakes on the bike?
Yep, had brakes. Yeah, I can't.
Was it the handle type or back pedal?
Back pedal brakes. Right. Yeah, back pedal brakes. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Not a hand brakes. Mm. They came later.
Mm. Now, when you started doing the deliveries, were the new suburbs starting at that point, or were they yet to begin?
No, they sort of came along probably halfway through my term.
Right. Yeah. So what effect did that have on you, on your work, on your delivery work?
I had to go further on the bike. Mm. I had to deliver further because most of the customers were fairly immediate neighbours of Bryant Street, Pascal Street, Featherston Street. The delivery ones, sometimes it delivered down the end of Featherston Street towards, but that's towards Botanical Road, but once Seddon Street, Birmingham and all those places emptied out, I worked longer hours.
Did as many people in the new subdivisions want delivery as your old customers? Again, I'm thinking of maybe if there were a different type of a family that maybe had a car.
Yes, that was changing.
Yeah. Did you suddenly find yourself delivering a lot of stuff to the new subdivisions, or just a few here and there?
Just a few here and there. I think that was tailoring off a bit. And of course, once someone had a car, they would also drop off stuff for their neighbours.
Mm.
You know, it was a very friendly neighbourhood.
Yeah.
So all new people, of course, coming to the neighbourhood, that's one way to getting to know your neighbours, delivering, dropping off their groceries. I think you're right. Home delivery tailored off a little bit as people had other forms of transport.
Well, I'm just guessing. I'm not saying what was or wasn't, but I'm wondering whether if these were young working families, whether they may have had a different pattern of shopping than the regulars who were living around where you are. But if that's not something you remember, then don't worry about it. No, that's fine. So how many orders roughly could you take in one load? Just sort of
was a bit of a test. Yeah. If you've ever seen Granville on his bike, try to get three boxes. I tried to get three boxes up. So you'd take as many as you could get because that would save coming back to the shop. Mm. So I think three boxes were about the limit.
Yeah. And how
mostly it took two boxes.
Again, just roughly on average, how many boxes would you deliver each afternoon after school?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, well. Six or eight deliveries, yeah.
So you'd have come to the shop back and forth maybe two or three trips?
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes there'd be no deliveries, you know, some days. And that's when you'd catch up with bottling and...
Because tell me some of the other jobs you did around the grocery. You mentioned bottling and such like. So if you weren't on your bike, what other things might you be doing for
I'd be opening up the big tea chests, opening those up, opening up chests of other wooden chests of raisins, dates. One of the problems we had when we opened dates and raisins and sultanas in wooden boxes, as I recall, was weevils. Weevils were quite a common thing, so you would eliminate the weevils if you could.
So the idea was to make sure that none of the weevils made their way into the little paper bags that
were
going
to be
sold.
That was one of my jobs, getting rid of the weevils. Terrible, isn't it? Yeah, health and safety would be pleased.
They would indeed.
There was no destruction of anything. We kept most of it. So, opening up bottling kerosene. Oh, I think I told you about that, didn't I? Kerosene bottle.
Yes, yeah. And you were responsible.
So labels. So labeling stuff. Yeah, we had labels on it. Yeah, things were stuck with labels. So. Weighing up was important, so you sometimes my father rechecked my weighing to make sure I was accurate. He wouldn't let me, because I had a sweet tooth, he knew I had a sweet tooth, he wouldn't let me weigh up things like sweets and lollies and biscuits. He would give me kerosene and flour, raisins, dates, things that I'm most likely not to eat. So I do recall when he said, would you look after the shop? I just want to go to the toilet. I used to fill my pockets up with, I used to get my hands in the lolly jar, so to speak. So that was, I do recall those moments. Delightful moments.
Now, what you described is almost like a second job, apart from being at school. Did you have much spare time to pursue hobbies or hang out with your friends?
No. I came straight home from school and straight to work, so the answer was no.
What about the weekends?
I did play rugby. Yeah, I played rugby on the weekend, so... So sport was my... Yeah, I was the only sporting person amongst the family. So I had two brothers, a sister. There was four in the family. I was the only one that seemed to play sport. That's the way it was. Boy Scouts. We were involved in Boy Scouts at that age. Or Cubs and then Scouts. So that was just down the road in Featherston Street. I remember where, you know, you remember things that happened. We built that... That hall is still there. The Tarkro Scout Hall was just on the other side, in Featherston Street, the other side of the Carwell Stream, by the bowling club. I don't think it's a scout hall today, but we built that. So we all the scouts and the cubs and the arcalers and the leaders, we built it on the weekend. So there was a job we did on the weekend. So we were sort of...
So you didn't have any special hobbies that you pursued?
Fishing and that, yes, I did. Yes, that was another thing we did, was fishing. We fished in the market, we built boats. We were busy. We built boats out of timber and corrugated iron, and we launched them into mostly the Mungoni, and we would travel up the Mungoni right up to Milson.
Oh, heavens.
Yeah, we'd row up there. And we'd also, we'd like some sustenance along the way, some lunch. So Hollow's Nursery were the provider of all our fruit and on the way. So we got caught a few times by Mr. Hollow's. But that was fishing, so we used to fish. So we'd fish in the Mungoni. So that's another thing that's probably not in the Mungoni today. We fished for eels and carp and perch. So times have changed, and we'd disappear on the weekends. When I wasn't working, I do recall we'd disappear on school holidays. Sometimes we'd disappear in the morning and not come home till it got dark. Nobody seemed to notice we'd gone.
And this is obviously why having a bike was so important.
Yeah, biking wasn't. We used to bike to, and that's why getting fit on the shop bike was important. We would bike, I can remember biking to Foxton Beach for the day, going for a swim and biking home again. Yeah, you don't do that.
No, you certainly would not.
So, then the shop got sold. We moved to Wood Street and my father kept the shop. That would be early 60s, late 50s, early 60s. The shop got, I think things were changing, and the changing pattern would be the emergence of supermarkets.
Do you happen to recall where the first supermarket was?
No.
Doesn't matter, that's fine.
But I know they were emerging because I could hear him talking about it.
Right, so was he getting out while he was ahead?
Yes,
think?
I think so. I think he knew the thing was going to change.
So what did he do next after selling the shop?
He worked for Baroad and Abrahams. Baroad and B&A's. So they employed him as a salesperson. He was a... selling home appliances, so he became an expert on fridges and fridges and freezers and TVs. That was what where the money was being spent. So he was
aware of the times and moving with them.
Yes. So that's what happened.
You mentioned to me once, I think, that your father owned another dairy for a while.
Yes, another grocer shop.
Grocer.
That was on the corner of Church and Ferguson Street. It's now a house.
Right. Did he let that out to somebody?
Yes.
Yeah.
He had a manager in there. And then it got converted into a house.
Right.
As things started to... I think laterally, if I do recall, he owned both shops. He was diversifying and then he realised it was not a great idea.
Right. More mileage in selling fridges and TVs newly comfortably off families, I guess you'd say.
Things
because the 60s were a good time for a lot of people.
Yep. I can't recall when supermarkets first came out, but they certainly would have been 60s, 70s.
Yeah, be certainly something like that.
Yeah.
Now, when did you finish being a delivery boy because the shop was sold, or did you finish because you'd done your bit?
Shop was sold.
Right.
Yeah.
So what kinds of jobs did you do after that had happened? You've touched on some of these a little earlier, I think, but you obviously kept on working to buy that car. What sort of things did you do?
Well, I when I was at high school, that's Boys High, Palmerston Boys High, I worked for Central Pharmacy. Central Pharmacy, which was down opposite the Central School.
Yeah.
In fact, it's just down the road now, it still exists. It was further closer to the school in those days, and a man called Rondaroo ran that.
And what was your job?
Rondaroo. My job was all the scripts. The scripts had to be signed off by the doctors. Once the scripts had been issued by the chemist, he had to put a stamp on them. They had to be re-delivered around all the doctors. So once again, on my bike. So on my bike, and I would take the scripts. That's the prescriptions, the actual physical prescription.
Yep, yep.
I would take them in my pannier bags.
And this is on your own bike, wasn't it?
On my own bike, yep. And then the other job I had when I ran out of that, Once again, recycling, here it comes. All the bottles, all the medicine bottles and the prescription bottles, pills, etc., were re-delivered back to the chemist, who, and my job was washing them and taking the labels off them. So hot soapy water and scrubbing. And so they reused all the bottles. Here we go again. That doesn't happen. Where do those bottles end up now? In the with the plastic bags in the landfill. So there's a change, isn't it?
That's for sure.
That is a change.
And so those were your main jobs until you left school?
Yep.
And when you left school, what happened then?
Well, it's interesting. I applied to go to Teachers College and I got accepted. And but I didn't have a lot of self-confidence back then. I was not, and I chickened out. Yeah, I didn't end up going to, I wasn't too sure whether I could do the job. And I just, that was just how I was. I wasn't confident. So I actually ended up working for Caltex Oil Company. Yeah, so I did an office job. I ended up then getting what's called a plant superintendent's job. I was only very young, I was only in my early 20s, and I ended up, I went from Whanganui to Blenheim to Tamanui, and I was managing plants, oil company plants. So
I think you did better than teaching then, because I think the salary would have been a bit better in the oil company.
Probably was, I lived in Blenheim for 7 years, so that involved leaving Palmerston North. So we did that. I think I'm one of the few people that have left Palmerston North twice and come back again. So here I am. Laterally after that, at age 30, I became an insurance broker. So I worked for an insurance company as an agent to start with, and then I went out on my own and changing times again, and changed the companies were wanting to get out of that job of having their own agents, so I could see that changing. So I went out on my own in my 40s, and away we went. So that was, then I retired at 60. I decided I had enough. I sold my business. And that's my life history.
Right. Well, it would seem that the legacy of your childhood of work served you well when you grew up. Would you say that?
Yes, definitely. Just working didn't do me any harm. It was a discipline. And my father came from that background too, I suppose. He lived in the Catlins, hard. Had to ride a horse 10 k's to work, or it was 10 miles in those days, to school, sorry, not to work, to school. And so he grew up in quite a hard life down the Catlins, riding a horse to school in the snow and the ice. And he used to wear bare feet to school, no shoes. So he came from that background, and working again, shooting rabbits and growing gardens.
So essentially, what you did was just simply part of the family culture.
It was just
what
a culture, and we just followed the Kiwi thing, I suppose.
Yeah.
A lot of my friends worked after school. Not all of them.
What sort of jobs did your other friends do? You mentioned paper runs, and that was a common thing.
They were quite common. Milk boys. Remember, there's another.
Yeah.
Home deliveries of milk. Yeah. So a milk run was quite a popular. The only thing people didn't like about that, they had to get out of bed at 5 a.m. To deliver the milk. Paper runs and milk runs were pretty popular. And they used to use paper boys. That's changed now.
Yeah.
They now deliver them on motorbikes, don't they?
I think they do.
Yeah.
And before that, I think that, they quite rightly decided that there was no reason why girls couldn't deliver newspapers. But that's all changed now, as you say.
So the word paper boys became paper persons.
Yes, probably.
I can't recall that.